Welcome to the University of Limerick Research Impact podcast series. I'm Christine Brennan, and today I'm joined by two psychologists, Deirdre O'Shea and Tadhg McIntyre, who have been involved in a pan-European Erasmus Plus project called Fix the Fixing, which seeks to tackle one of the major threats to the integrity of sport, match fixing. Dr. Deirdre O'Shea is a lecturer in the Department of Personnel and Employment Relations at the Kemmy Business School and a chartered work and organisational psychologist. Dr. Tadhg McIntyre is a lecturer in sport and exercise and performance psychology and chartered psychologist. Both are members of the Health Research Institute here at the University of Limerick. So starting with you, Tadhg, can you tell me a little bit about what match fixing is?
Yeah, it's defined as the act of influencing the course or result of a sporting event for personal, sporting or financial gain. And it is, without doubt, the greatest threat to sporting credibility. And that integrity is key, because without that level of integrity, we have a real issue in terms of sponsorship, viewership and participation for sport around the world.
So Deirdre, could I bring you in here? Could you elaborate a little further about what exactly you can and cannot do in terms of match fixing?
Sure. So the obvious one is that players are not allowed to bet on a match or a game that they're playing in. That's one of the obvious ones. Although in saying that, nearly 20% of players that we surveyed in our sample didn't actually know that. Secondly, family members of players or of people associated with sports organisations are also not allowed to place a bet on a match that, for example, their relative is playing in. Staff in a club are not allowed to place a bet that their team is playing in. And another one that's key that many people don't realise is that anyone involved in a team are not allowed to disclose information about a match that would not be public knowledge. And that's a particularly important one these days with all the tweets and the Facebook shares and so on and so forth. That can be one that can be actually quite easy to fall prey to.
So this is an issue that affects both the amateur and the professional codes. Tadhg, have there been any examples in the amateur code that you could talk to us?
I'll give you one example from Irish soccer. Recently at Lontown, I've had two players banned for 1 year. That's essentially down to an allegation of match fixing by two players. One was the goalkeeper. It's quite interesting because we know from prior incidents, the goalkeepers are in position to influence games through sins of omission and sins of commission. They could, for example, give away a penalty and then fail to save that penalty. And this may have been the case within this match, which was a 2-2 draw in a friendly. And how we deal with these issues is quite interesting. You know, that's being dealt with by the soccer authorities. That could also be a criminal investigation. And that criminal investigation might have much more of a punitive measure and outcomes. And, you know, this is a criminal act, this level of corruption we're talking about. And it's probably important that it's dealt with both by the Gardaí, who have a special unit dedicated to this, and the sporting authorities.
So the issue affects not just players, but it also affects referees and officials that are involved in the sport. Are there any international examples that speak to that?
Sure. So there are many international examples. One that was quite a real world scandal at the time it happened in 2005 to 2007 was in the National Basketball Association, or the NBA in the US. Tim Donaghy, a former professional basketball referee for 13 seasons between 1994 and 2007, resigned from the sport in July 2007. Earlier that year, the Federal Bureau of Investigation published a report of an investigation on Donaghy for allegedly betting on matches that he officiated during the seasons 2005, 2006 and 2007. And in 2007, Donaghy pleaded guilty to two federal charges related to the investigation. And a year later, he was actually sentenced to 15 months in prison and 3 years of supervised release. So that had quite a strong reaction at the time on social media, where there was a burst of users expressing their opinions regarding Donaghy, regarding match fixing and so on and so forth. So in our tweet fix, for example, we found that there was over 17,000 tweets about that, over 13,000 people commenting on it, and over 21,000 distinct descriptors of how it was described in social media.
So could I ask you to come back to the Fix the Fixing project itself? It's pan-European. Who are you working with on it?
Our partners were quite interesting. As a psychologist, it was certainly innovative to be in a situation where we're working with people from a sports coaching body and with lawyers, people who are experts in international law and sport law. For example, the Play Fair Code in Austria and the Irish Institute, which is a government think tank in France, they were really interested in this from an illegality perspective in terms of corruption in general. And certainly the legal ramifications of this can't be underestimated.
You've given some great examples there of how global the issue and also how it affects players and officials. But could you give me an idea of how can it be combated? What can be done?
One of the things is around awareness, not just the illegal consequences of match fixing, but the actual personal consequences for players. In terms of how we can combat it going forward, one of the key things that we have to do at a very young age is instill the values of integrity and ethics in young players and in everybody associated with sport. And that's why we've developed an educational tool which comprehensively covers those issues that people have to be aware of. So one of the outcomes of the Fix the Fixing project was to develop an educational tool that sports organizations can use, sometimes in conjunction with their own training tools, in order to help players understand what the rules are with regard to fixing, what the dangers are with regard to match fixing, and how they can protect themselves from a request regarding match fixing. So, for example, in the survey that we did on the Fix the Fixing project, we found that only about half of the players in our survey, in a survey of over 600 players, actually knew what the rules were with regard to betting in their own country. So our educational tool has a number of different aspects to it. What are the risk factors around match fixing, how players can protect themselves, and also rules with regard to each European country as to what they need to know with regard to match fixing. One of the other things we found that was very important was an organizational culture in each sport organization around ethics, around integrity, and that included things like even being willing to report violations. We found in our survey that of those people who had witnessed match fixing, only about a third of them actually reported it. So that's a key value that organizations can instill in their culture and in everybody involved in it is around an ethical climate and ethical culture. One of the other things that we found was that even in sporting organizations that have those very strong values around integrity and ethics, people can still engage in match fixing, but they have to, first of all, convince themselves or give themselves a rationale as to why that might be important. So they have to engage in what we call moral disengagement. They have to have a rationale for why, you know, maybe they're not paid enough or there's a reason that they should do this. So there's an extra step involved that makes it a little bit more difficult for players to do it or to fall into it accidentally. So there are two things that we can do to combat match fixing. The first is education, and the second is an organizational culture that focuses on integrity and ethics.
So Tadhg, do you see it as a top-down, bottom-up approach in terms of combating match fixing?
I think it's really interesting and important to recognize the role of culture and good leaders. It's also important to look at the bottom-up approach and say, you know, athletes are role models, they're potentially mentors, or they could be anti-mentors. So they could be reinforcing really poor behaviors and breaches of sporting integrity. For example, if somebody bets on themselves in a competition and they're found guilty of this, the type of punishment they get should be quite severe if we're trying to change the culture around this. So instead of it just being, for example, a sporting sanction, it should be actually dealt with probably at the criminal level. Because if we deal with it in that way, we have a chance to change the culture. And I think that's really, really important.
So you're both coming at this issue of integrity and corruption from a psychology point of view or standpoint, and also sports from your point of view, Tadhg. Why did you decide to look specifically at match fixing or at corruption in sport in particular?
A number of years ago, I worked on a research project funded by the World Anti-Doping Agency. And it was looking at what are the personal psychological factors that we can use to understand people's risk-taking in terms of doping. And doping is like match-fixing. There are breaches of sporting integrity. And I think it's really important to look at these in terms of athletes that are at risk, maybe those which are more vulnerable in terms of well-being. And we know one of the consequences of engaging in this may be linked to athlete having negative emotions, shame, for example. And to understand it from a well-being perspective is why I'm interested in this topic.
Deirdre, from the Kemi Business School point of view, why did you decide to get involved in this project?
As a working organizational psychologist, I have an interest in silence and voice in organizations, why people speak up about, for example, wrongdoing that they witness in the workplace. And sports can be seen as a workplace for many players, even whether it's amateur or it's professional. So one of the things that I was interested from an organizational point of view was to do with the moral decision-making aspect of match fixing and why people engage in it. And also from a psychological perspective, what we can do to protect people against match fixing and against this type of illegal activity. In addition, the Kemi Business School adheres to the United Nations Prime Initiative, which is the Principles for Responsible Management Education. And in fact, the University of Limerick is the only Irish university that is a full signatory of the UN Global Compact, which addresses anti-corruption as an imperative. So my interest is multifold, both personal and from a school perspective.
Can I go back to you, Tadhg, on that? Have you got anything to add to that particular area?
Yeah, it's just to highlight that some of our partners are now working together on a new Erasmus Plus project, which is called Whistle. And it's about understanding how to facilitate whistleblowing within sport, because that's one of the key determinants around understanding match fixing. And also from my own perspective as a researcher, I'm concerned with athlete mental health and well-being and the consequences for athletes' psychological status is linked to breaches of sporting integrity. So to understand it from that perspective, I think is really worthwhile.
Great. So I certainly look forward to hearing more about that project in particular, Tadhg. Thank you both for your time. You've been listening to Dr. Deirdre O'Shea and Dr. Tadhg McIntyre of the University of Limerick. To find out more about this project, go to fixthefixing.eu. This research is supported by the European Commission Erasmus Plus programme. To find out more about research impact, go to our website, ul.ie/research impact.